Now, obviously, this is an unusual combination. We haven't seen this before in our study of Buddhism. Usually, Buddhist monks avoid getting themselves involved directly in politics. In fact, there are lots of very marvelous examples of Buddhist monks who were drawn into politics inadvertently by the actions of various kings or political leaders and quite dramatically withdrew in order to keep a distance between their own monastic practice and the political life that was going on around them. But Buddhism has always had a strong political side, of course. We've talked about that a lot over the course of these lectures. This political involvement in the Buddhist tradition has been associated particularly with the figure of the Dharmaraja, or the righteous king. And the first of these, or the first definitive, most influential of these, was Ashoka, the king who lived back only a couple of centuries or so after the death of the Buddha. Now, you could think of the Dalai Lama, this is not inaccurate to think of him in this way, as one of the few figures in Buddhist history who has brought the ideal of the righteous king, of the political leader, the king who protects the community and promulgates the Dharma. He's brought this ideal together with the ideal of the charismatic monk in one person. So the Dalai Lama, in some ways, is the unique figure that he is and the powerful figure that he is, because he is able to unite the political side of Buddhism with the monastic side. Makes him complex, but it also makes him influential in a way that would not be found in other aspects of the Buddhist tradition. The transition from purely monastic power to what we are calling temporal power, political power in the secular affairs of Tibet, was accomplished by one of the great figures in this lineage, the so-called Great Fifth Dalai Lama, fifth in the lineage, who lived from 1617 to 1683. So he lived in the 17th century when the pilgrims were making their way over here to America. The fifth Dalai Lama outmaneuvered his rivals with the help of a Mongol prince, and he established Gelug political dominance over Tibet. This had not been done before, and the fifth Dalai Lama was the figure who really made this possible. And as a symbol of his authority, he built that great palace in Lhasa. It's known as the Potala Palace, that is, I think, in so many ways, a symbol of the lineage of the Dalai Lamas, and for many people, I think, a symbol of Tibet. I suspect that most of you have some kind of a visual image of it in your heads. It's really an important focus of pilgrimage in the Tibetan tradition, and a place that a lot of Buddhist travelers would very much like to have a chance to see. When you go to Lhasa, when I was there a couple of years ago, what you do very often, normal way to approach the old part of the city is to go down a long boulevard that's now called Beijing Boulevard, built by the Chinese authorities, and then you go past a small stupa in between two hills, and up on the left-hand side rises the Potala Palace, dominating a big square. It's a very traditional structure in a lot of ways. It's made out of stone and it's massive. In the old days, during great festival events in Lhasa, monks would hang great hangings off the front of the Potala. It's an enormous, long stone ramp in the front of it that would be very suitable for that kind of thing. What I'm struck by when I see it, when I see pictures of it, and also when I was standing there in person, fairly lightheaded from my first encounter with the altitude in Tibet, I'm struck by how massive it is, of course, how much it sits down so firmly on the ground, but also how it sits almost as if it's an architectural version of an old Buddhist statue. It also has a little bit of that buoyancy of the Buddha. So it sits firmly on the ground and it also seems to float. Sometimes the Tibetans even describe it as a bird with two wings on the side and then one massive palatial structure in the center. So it's a remarkable and I think very effective architectural symbol of not just the Dalai Lamas, of course, and the power and imagination of the Great Fifth, but also of the Tibetan tradition itself.